Thank you, and welcome everyone to the ADA Audio Conference Series. I am going to be moderating in conjunction with Peter Berg from the Great Lakes ADA Center today. So I welcome you from wherever you might be joining us, and I hope you'll find today's session informative. We have individuals who are joining us today using the telephone and those that are also connected through the webinar platform and individuals who are using the real-time captioning through the webinar platform. So I'm just going to take a few minutes to review some of the webinar features to make sure that everyone who is using that system is familiar and comfortable with the features. So as I mentioned, we have closed captioning available through the webinar platform. You can access the closed captioning by clicking on the CC icon that's at the top of your screen. For those of you that are using keyboards, you would use Control-F8, and you can then adjust the captioning screen as needed. You can also customize your view. Many people don't know that if you're in the webinar platform, you can change your view around. Up at the top of your screen, you have a menu bar. Choose View from that drop-down menu up there, and you will have options to play around with your layout. That will only affect your layout, your view. So go ahead and take a few moments if you want to and just try out what might work best for you. There's different ways, different sizes, different directions that the different boxes will be, and it can be more comfortable for you in some of the different layout, so go ahead and try that. We will take questions from you today, and that's an important part of our webinar program and our audio conference session. We'll have two ways that people can submit questions depending on which platforms you're involved with. Those of you that are on the telephone, when we're ready to take questions, we will cue the operator, who is Lavita with us today, and she will give you instructions on how to use your touch-tone phone to ask questions. Those of you that are using the webinar platform, you can submit questions at any time in the chat area text box. For those of you that are using a keyboard, that would be using Control-M on your keyboard to access the chat area. You will not be able to see the questions as they are submitted. They are being hidden from you, but they are being transmitted to the presenters. So they will be able to see them, and they will repeat them at the time when they address individual questions. We do ask people to refrain from using emotions or hand raising if possible. That is a feature that is available in the session, but unless you're directed to do so by the presenter, otherwise it can be discouraging or confusing for people or will send them off track. So at this time, I am going to go forward and introduce our presenter, who is Marian Bessels, and she is the director of the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center. Marian has been with the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center for over 10 years now at this time, and she leads up that effort, and she is also in charge of and leads up the Hospitality and Disability Initiative, which is one of the projects of the ADA National Network, similar to the ADA Audio Conference Program, and she'll be talking more about that as she goes through her session today. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and turn over the microphone to Marian Bessels. Marian, go ahead.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be with you all today. Lodging issues are something very near and dear to my heart as a person with a disability, a mobility disability, a wheelchair user. I have had many challenges and exceptional service at many facilities across the country. And it was one of the reasons that I was very interested in helping the ADA National Network launch a hospitality initiative that we'll talk about later in this session. As you all are probably aware of, there are some exciting new regulations for the lodging industry, and we're going to talk about some of those today. So on slide 2, we're going to look at today's agenda, which is going to encompass the ADA regulations and their effective dates, the new reservation practices for places of lodging, accessible guest rooms, just how many are required, and those that are split up between physical access issues and communication. And talking about some of the accessibility features that lodging may have, such as recreation, pools, things like that. So let's jump in and talk about the new ADA regulations that the Department of Justice has recently amended. There are new regulations for Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Title III talks about places of public accommodation. And places of public accommodation are those that you and I go to on a regular basis. And it includes hotels, restaurants, gift stores, grocery stores, any place the public goes to purchase goods and services. So you can see that lodging would definitely be one of those. And these new regulations are making dramatic changes to the way a hotel industry looks at a person with a disability and includes them in all of their processes. And especially we're going to highlight a lot of things around reservations today, because there's some really exciting new ones for reservations. Generally, the effective date for the regulations on title on slide 4 talks about March 15th. We need to look at March 15th being the date 2011 when a lot of these changes were made. The new facility standards are changed on March 15th, 2012, which comes up in about 3 weeks. And so I'm going to need to see if I need to do something different. Peter, if you can advance the slides to page slide 5 for me, please. So places of public lodging. The new definition includes hotels, motels, inns, and facilities that provide sleeping rooms for stays that are short-term in nature. We're really talking about the kind of things that you and I may do on a regular basis if we're traveling for business or personal travel. Almost all of our stays are going to involve less than 30 days. And these are where you don't have the right to go back to a specific room, so that you reserve a room and they'll give you the one that is available. So it's not like a condo or a timeshare where you would go back possibly to the same facility time and time again with the exact same room. In a hotel, as you know, you don't have the ability to go back to your room necessarily because it's not yours. It is something that you go to as available. So a guest room, by definition, in a hotel or a motel or an inn, would be things like you can get on or off-site management so that there's somebody there managing the facilities. They're going to have a reservation service. You're going to be able to walk up and rent a room on the spot or be able to call in, as most of us will do, or do things on the web. And there's also going to be the availability of housekeeping and linen services. These all define what makes a place of public lodging that we can go to on a regular basis. So that you can see those very different from timeshares or condo facilities. But there are also timeshares and condos now that are operating as a traditional hotel as well. So we're going to look at those being hotels. If they indeed rent out to the public in the kind of provisions we just talked about, where you can go up and rent a room, et cetera. So some are, we're going to be doing both, where they're going to function as a hotel, and some of them are going to be individual owned and operated. Okay, next slide. The reservation practices. This is some really exciting stuff. There are new requirements for hotels and motels, inns, and any other type of lodging that are going to ensure access for guests with disabilities. And it's going to be including being able to use the web to be able to rent your room and reserve your room. the slide shows that this is a good example of the preferences that you might want to look at when reserving a room on the web. Do you want an accessible room with a tub? Do you want an accessible room with a roll-in shower? What other kind of features are you going to want in the room? Up until now, it was very rare to be able to find accessible features on a standard hotel website. And as of March 15, that will all change. So this is just an example that we were able to pull down from one of the websites of a major hotel. Okay. On reservation slide number 7, who's responsible for this? Okay. Who's covered? Requirements that cover public accommodation. Anyone that owns, leases, or operates a place of lodging. We've already described what a place of lodging was. So these are going to be any hotel or inn, motel, that actually leases to the public, operates a place of public accommodation. So third-party services are not going to be covered. And those third-party services that we're going to be talking about, we're going to be using that term because that's what's required in the regulations by the Department of Justice. The third-party entities are things like Travelocity, Hotels.com, and Orbitz, all places where hotels give a block of their rooms to these third-party vendors to sell for them. And we'll talk later how these vendors must get accessible rooms as well as non-accessible rooms in the block that they get. But when we talk about third party from now on, we're going to be referring to those kind of vendors, the Travelocities and Orbitz that you see and hear about on TV and that you can go and you can look at a variety of different types of hotel products in order to reserve your hotel room. On slide 8, we're going to be looking at the 5 basic requirements under the reservation practices. And in practice number 1, we're talking about individuals with disabilities have to have the exact same access as everyone else. Okay. So if you prefer making your reservations by calling up the operator and telling them what you want, you should be able to do that as a person with a disability. You should be able to walk in to any facility, and if you, you know, find yourself in need of a room unexpectedly, you should be able to walk in person and reserve a room and talk about what your accessibility needs are. And again, the third parties, the Orbitzes, the Priceline.coms, etc., should be fully accessible and allow you to navigate their website. So that means it needs to be accessible for folks with communication disabilities. So it needs to be fully accessible for somebody using a screen reader and not rely on sound as an indicator of movement to the next screen, et cetera, for somebody who is deaf or hard of hearing. On slide 9, we're going to be looking at reservation practices number 2, which talks about the hotel for the very first time needs to be able to identify and describe all of the accessible features of the hotel and the guest room that somebody will be renting with enough details so that you know exactly what they have and how that meets your specific needs. So an example would be if you were somebody with a mobility impairment and you want to make sure they have van accessible parking because you have a van with a side lift. You want to make sure that the pool has a lift so that you'll be able to use the pool facilities. You want to talk to them about the fact that you may prefer a roll-in shower over a tub, that you want to make sure that the shower controls are within reach range when you're seated on the bench in the shower. You're going to want to talk to them possibly about the height of the bed. and if it meets your needs. If you use a Hoyer lift, do they have a bed that has open space underneath to be able to maneuver the Hoyer lift underneath the bed? You're going to want to make sure possibly how much space there may be between the beds if you are in a room with two double beds. You may want to make sure the clearance underneath the vanity in the bathroom meets your needs. Okay, I noticed that I am using my slideshow, and I will go back and make sure that I am using the correct slides. I pulled up my own slideshow, and I will make sure that I'm using the ones that you're using. I'm so sorry. I deferred back to my old ones. Okay. So on the next slide, we're going to be looking at reservation practices. Okay. Number three. A reservation system must hold back accessible guest rooms until all other rooms of that type have been rented. This is great because if you are late to register to a session or to a hotel, you're going to be wanting to make sure that there's a room available. So they can't give away the accessible room just because it's part of their hotel stock. They must hold that accessible room back to make sure that you have access to a hotel room just like everyone else does. So the last of the hotel's rooms that will be sold will be the accessible room, which is great for those of us with disabilities or communication needs who are going to need accessible features. We put this slide in, and we want to show you some of the things that are good about sometimes a very typical accessible bathroom and some that aren't. You'll notice that they have a seat that complies with the regulations, but you'll also notice that there's a grab bar right behind the seat. Well, if you're sitting on that seat, that grab bar is going to be doing you no good and also going to make it all very challenging for you to sit on that seat comfortably. But you can notice that if they drop the head of the shower head down, you would be able to use it. The sink is accessible, but you'll notice that it doesn't have a vanity around. We'll talk about some of the new requirements to make sure that however the accessible room is laid out, it's laid out with the same vanity access as the standard rooms do. You'll notice that the pipes are wrapped, and that provides full access for folks who are coming up underneath the sink with a wheelchair, and it protects legs from being burned. You'll notice that the grab bar, the toilet's outside the picture, but you notice the grab bar that's going to go behind the toilet shows a telephone. The telephone is too low. It doesn't allow enough reach range distance between the telephone and the grab bar. So this has some accessible feature challenges as well, a lot of them. You know, the hair dryer is well within reach range and to the mirror, as well as an accessible outlet. Okay, next slide. Reservation practices four. Once someone has reserved an accessible guest room, the hotel must remove it from the reservation system, so it's no longer available for anyone else to rent, so that you can then guarantee that you will have access to all of the features of the room that you have requested. Okay? Next slide, we're talking about reservation practices five. This is the best feature, or I think one of the best features of the reservation practice, in that you're guaranteed and they must hold the specific room that you as an individual with a disability reserve. That will not be good for anyone else, and many hotels will say, we don't do that. We never reserve room 322 for a guest. Well, now they must reserve room 322 if that happens to be the accessible room with roll-in shower and the king-size bed that you requested, because it has the features that you specifically need. And they told you that that was a room that had all the features and it met your needs. So they must take that room, move it out of the supply, and hold it specifically for you, so that you won't get surprises that many of us probably have had, where you get there and they said, oh, you know, we don't have that room available anymore. I can't offer you that room. You can say, but I reserved this specific room. It was supposed to be taken out of the supply chain.
Okay.
Slide 15 talks about the exception to the reservation practices. And so places like Travelocity and Orbitz don't have to comply with the last three provisions we just talked about. They don't have the ability to remove a room from the system, guarantee a specific room, or hold back accessible rooms, because that's not the agreement that they have with the hotels once they're given a block of room. So they're not going to be able to honor that portion of the reservation practices because they just don't have control over it. But as an individual, you still must be able to make reservations for the rooms and in the same manner and time as other people do. And they still must be able to describe the accessibility features to you. So they're going to have to get that information from the properties to be able to tell you exactly what those processes are. Okay? The next slide talks about third-party reservation services. Covered entities must make reasonable efforts, so the hotels themselves, to give at least some of those accessible rooms available to the third-party services, the Orbitz and the hotels.com. And they're going to have to make sure that they give that information we just talked about to the third parties, so that they're going to have the ability to determine, you as an individual is going to need to be able to determine what those features are. This is really exciting, so that you've got full access to folks, but you're not going to be able, you're not going to have the third party doing it saying, oh, we can't do that. Now they have a requirement, just like everyone else, to be able to check out and make sure that the third party vendors are providing the access that you'd hope to have. Okay? And the next slide, slide 18, talks about, 17, I'm sorry, talks about limited liability. So if the third-party vendor, the hotels.com, doesn't provide the information correctly, the hotel itself is not going to be held liable. So hotels.com says, oh, it's got this, and this, and it's not exactly what the hotel told them. You can't go back to the hotel and say, well, Travelocity told me this and that. You can't hold the hotel liable for that, but they don't have the control of the third-party vendor. And so it's not their issue because they don't have that control. So it makes it kind of a little dicey sometimes to rely on the third party, but at least you can understand where the liability lies, and it's not. The hotel has no liability. You can go back to Travelocity and complain. Okay. Operator, we are in time for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star, then one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star, then one key. One moment, please.
While we're getting those questions in order, Marion, participants in the webinar room can ask questions by submitting them in the chat area, and we have one that was submitted while you were presenting there, Marion. And they want to know, I guess, clarification of how these new requirements apply to timeshares and condos where the units are rented to many individuals.
And that's the case where if they are acting like a hotel, where they are doing it on a short-term basis, where they are pretty much a hotel and not, doing short-term, et cetera, acting, they that need service, they have short-term reservations, et cetera, then they're going to have the requirement, just like a hotel does, for the same practices. It's only when they are strictly timeshare, strictly condos, where they're not going to be, long-term rental, et cetera, that they're going to not be required to provide the mandates of this hotel requirement. So a lot of us will, rent a condo as a third party for a week, just like we would a hotel. And so they must be able to talk about the disability perspective in that condo room.
Okay, excellent. Lavita, do we have a question on telephone?
We do. Our first question comes from Rick Edwards.
Hi, Mary Peter to the crowd. I'm totally confused now about the third parties, because you said that initially the third parties are not covered, and then you said they are required to provide the information about the room accessibility, and then you said again on 15 that there's an exception, but you said that the hotel still has an obligation to make sure they can reserve in exactly the same way that everybody else in the public can. So I'm not following you at all.
Okay, my apologies. The third-party vendors get the hotel block from Hotel X. And in that hotel block of rooms that they're providing the third-party vendor, the Travelocity, they must have accessible rooms included in that block so somebody with a disability can rent them. The third-party vendor must be able to describe the hotel features or the room and the hotel room to talk about how it accommodates somebody with a disability. So they have the same requirements that the hotel itself does if you use the hotel reservation system. The liability issue, and maybe that's where it's confusing, is that that the hotel itself is not going to be liable for what Travelocity may or may not have said about the room. So if they somehow gave you wrong information, you can't go back to Hotel X and say, Travelocity said it had this feature, and I reserved room 322.
Are they required?
Hold on one second. Rick, can you pick up your hands? The folks are having difficulty hearing you with an echo in the webinar room. Rick's original question had to do with the application of the lodging, the reservation requirements to the third-party entities that the Marion had been referencing, such as Orbitz and Travelocity and Hotels.com. So, Rick, if you picked up your handset, you can go ahead with your follow-up question.
I'm sorry, I don't have an option of a handset here, but I'll move closer. Is that better?
Yes, you're clear enough.
Okay. The confusion then comes with who's going to be liable if I order a room through Orbitz or whomever, Travelocity, and they either get the room wrong or they don't reserve or take the room out of the mix, then who do I communicate this problem with?
You have to go back to the third party.
So they are covered under the regulations.
Right, but the hotel itself is not.
Okay.
All right. Do we have our next question on telephone?
The next question comes from Michael Atkins.
Yes, I'm in with Michael, and I had a question about requesting a room with a service animal. I've been told, of course, which you're clarifying today, that I can't request a specific room. A lot of times I want one that's on a lower level so I can take the dog out for release areas. And will this cover that so that I can request a room and they hold it instead of giving it away? Am I understanding that correctly?
Right, and we'll talk about service animals later in the presentation today.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Gary Elder.
Hi, this is Rob. I want to go back to the exception and liability issue.
Wait one second. Can you pick up the handset? I'm having some feedback on your end.
Okay, how's that?
Much better.
Okay. I want to go back to the exception and the liability issue. Okay, I booked a room through Orbitz, and they tell me certain features of the room. I get to the hotel, and they tell me that that room doesn't have those features. What do I do at that point? I'm not interested in going back to Orbitz and arguing about it. I'm standing there at the desk ready to check in. What do I do then?
That then, goes to hotel customer service, and they're saying that the room that we had blocked for you doesn't have a roll-in shower and you need the roll-in shower. Then if they have a roll-in shower, then you would ask to be placed, an available room. If the roll-in shower is not available, what else can they accommodate you? Is there a removable shower chair that might be able to meet your needs? Those would be some of your options, but then to negotiate once you're on site.
Yes, sir. I'm basically in the hands of customer service for them to get me or to try to find me something that I need.
Right. The other option would be, and I've not done this, but I would imagine you could also say that once you've reserved the room, is to confirm it with the hotel on site as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have another question from another person in our room.
Go ahead.
Hello. I wanted to understand something with the showers. Do the handheld shower, is it required for a handicapped room to have a handheld shower? And is it required a bench? Or is there a possibility to get an actual chair? Because I have a spinal cord injury and a bench will not support me. And how many is
required? Okay. We'll go ahead and answer your question. Thanks for the question.
Okay.
Can we reserve this a little bit until we talk about accessible features of the bathroom?
Yeah.
Later on today.
I got one other question from online, then we'll go ahead with move along with the presentation at this time. But Mary, a question about how do the new reservation requirements apply to public entities operating places of lodging, such as State Department of Natural Resources operating lodging on state in state parks?
It's still considered a lodging facility. And so the same requirements for reservation, et cetera, would be covered as well.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we carry on with the presentation?
Okay. We'll go on to slide 19. Accessible guest rooms. How many are required? And that's really important to know that there, probably not as many as you think there might be. On the next slide, for those of you that may not have the slide in front of you or can read a very complex slide, on slide 20, it'll show you a table that talks about number 1 through 25 rooms will require a guest room without a roll-in shower. So on slide 20, we're going to look at from 25 to 50. It has two accessible rooms, but not a roll-in shower. Once we get to 51, we will now have three accessible rooms with one with a roll-in shower. 76 to 100 has four accessible rooms. We still only have one roll-in shower. And then from 101 to 150, we get to five accessible rooms plus two roll-in showers. And that's for a total of seven rooms accessible. And it goes all the way up to 1,000 and over, which talks about 20 accessible rooms plus one for each fraction over 100. And then 1% of the total being roll-in showers, which gives you a total of 3% of the total. So you can really see, as we describe this, that roll-in showers are not required till you have 51 rooms or more. And then it goes up in increments of 50 the first time, and the second time, and then over 200 to 201 to 300, you get an increasing amount. So you don't have a lot of roll-in showers. A lot of people think, oh, roll-in showers, you know, you're going to be able to get them. And it might be that that's really not the case, or that somebody else has already reserved it. If it's a smaller hotel, they may only be required to have one or two roll-in showers total. So for many of us, roll-in showers may be exactly what we need, but there may only be a couple, and someone may have already reserved that room for us. Okay. The next one talks about communication features. And this is going to be, again, a separate table that looks at how many rooms require communication features. And those communication features we'll talk about later. It talks about fire alarm signals and telephone box controls, et cetera. So we're looking at 1 to 25 has two rooms, 25 to 54, 51 to 75, 7, 76 to 100, 9, 12 over 101 to 150. So there's, as you can see, there's a lot more communication accessibility required in hotel rooms. And it's important to remember that each of these features for mobility and communication are going to be required for hotels. And that's not changed in the regulation. But on the next slide, you're going to see, then on slide 22, that at least one of the mobility accessible guest rooms shall have both. It'll have a mobility accessible features and communication accessible features. But not more than 10% of the mobility accessible guest rooms are going to be used to satisfy the requirement for communication accessible rooms. Up until now, the 91 standards, all mobility accessible guest rooms and then additional ones were required to be equipped for communication access. So the overlap is now what's brand new for the new 2010 standards. These requirements, though, are only going to be triggered by new construction or alterations, and then can be used for barrier removal in existing facilities if they do not comply with the current 91 standards. So if the facility that you go in complied with the 91 standards, they had enough communication accessible rooms and enough mobility rooms, they would not have to have a bunch of additional communication accessible features because they met the requirement under 91 until they start altering a facility or building new rooms. Okay, on slide 23, we're going to look at what an accessible communication feature is. And it's visual fire alarm signals, it's notification devices that will alert somebody with flashing lights for incoming telephone call or the doorbell knocking or ringing a bell. The telephone will have volume control. There'll be an electrical outlet next to the telephone to be able to use the TTY if somebody's still using a TTY. And things like vibrating alarm clocks all will be provided in a communication accessible room. Next slide talks about what the accessible features are for the mobility accessible rooms. So we're looking at doorways with at least 32 inches of clear width. We're looking at lower people, so many times you'll see that there will be a standard people and a lower one as well. You're going to look at 36 inches on each side of the bed to allow somebody with a wheelchair to maneuver on either side of the bed or between beds. You're going to look at the door locks and door handles and operating controls such as the temperature gauge and draperies, light switches. All of those are going to need to be at a reachable height, which under the 91 standards is 54 inches. And when newly built or newly renovated after March 15th, it will be 48 inches, which is huge. 6 inches makes a huge difference in reachable range. So a lot of these reachable controls and amenities, if they're at 54 inches currently, are currently within guidelines and would not have to be modified. But if they're renovating the room, and many hotels do that, depending on the standards, usually every 4 to 6 years, those features would have to be modified to make sure that they meet the new standards for reachable range of 48 inches. Okay, the next slide we're talking about accessible bathroom features. And you're going to look at things like the maneuvering space that's going to be required to allow people to maneuver around the accessible room. So being able to get to the toilet, get to the sink. You'll notice in the picture that we showed on slide 12 that showed fairly large maneuvering space, so that it looks like you could get around, even though you didn't see it, to the toilet. You could get under the sink. You could maneuver to the tub. You notice that in this slide that at least the seat is well positioned within reach of the tub or shower head. It has a handheld shower spray with a hose that is reachable. You don't have the side grab bar on this one. But you'll remember in the last slide we showed exposed pipes were shielded. If indeed there was no vanity for other bathrooms, the vanity wouldn't need to be accessible or any bigger than what we saw in that one. But sometimes they have a tendency to only put a sink, a bare sink with no counter space in an accessible room. And in a non-accessible room, you have a lot of counter space to be able to put your toiletries. Under the new 2010 standards, you must have comparable vanity. Also, reachable elements are going to be required to be accessible. Currently, the 54-inch reach range for towel storage or robe hooks, et cetera, things that you'll be able to reach. Sometimes the towels are above the toilet,
and are not within a 54-inch reach range, so it's very difficult to reach them, or the place to be able to store your shampoo is at a standing reach range and not a seated reach range, which would be required if you're using a roll-in shower or seated position. Okay, that was kind of a short group. Now we're going to open it up to questions again.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star, then one key.
And participants in the webinar room can submit their questions into the chat area. Amita, do we have our first question?
The first question comes from Yvonne Thompson.
Let me give it. If folks are using speaker phones, it asks you to pick up a handset if that's possible. If not, get as close to the speaker phone as possible so people can hear your questions. I'm sorry. Go ahead with your question.
Which one had the? Who came up first?
Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. This is Linda Muckway from Muncie. I have a question. When she talks about the changes in the reach ranges, which I'm aware of, is she saying that even if a hotel has complied with the 91 standards, that they are going to be required to change it to 48-inch reach range of both side reach and straightforward reach?
No. If they complied with the 91 standards, until they modify that room, they are not going to be required. It's called Safe Harbor.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that. But Safe Harbor says that if you complied and if it was within 54 inches of the current standards, the 91 standards, then you will not have to modify to the lower standard. And if you think about it, it makes sense because the cost of renovating a facility to drop all of the light switches and everything else from 54 to 48 inches would be astronomical. And if somebody complied with the ADA originally, they shouldn't be penalized and be forced to comply with the current the new standards that will be coming in about a month. So that was built into the ADA to assure that businesses who did it right the first time would be able to, you know, keep those until they modified or changed. Now, if they didn't comply, then they would, as a modification, as a requirement, they would be required to modify that and make it accessible, because if it's over 54 inches, it's not fully accessible to people with disabilities.
Right.
So that then, when they go to change it, they would have to modify it to the 2010 standards if they're doing it after March 15th.
Okay, I have one other quick question, and it kind of goes back to the Travelocity thing, but I didn't get a chance to ask it, but I think it's a pretty good question. With the Travelocity thing, if you were to order a room through Travelocity and you're not sure whether they did give you the appropriate room, is there a way that you can call the hotel directly after that and make sure that you got the correct room but still be able to pay Travelocity's price?
Thanks for your question, Linda.
If you reserve it through Travelocity, then you have that room reserved. And quite honestly, I've not tried to do that myself, and actually that's something I may try and do next time I travel to see what the process is. But I think you might be able to go to the hotel and say, look, I reserved a room through Travelocity. I just want to confirm that it has the features, and they should be able to look up the room reservation and be able to confirm it. But I've not done that, so I can't verify that for you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gary Elder.
Hello. First, I did it through Priceline, and once I
got the reservation. I called the hotel itself, and I made sure that the room was accessible, and that was fine. So you should be able to do that without any problems. It did work with Priceline. But my question is back to the mobility features. It's only 1% with the mobility with the roll-in shower, and then I wanted to know why is it 5% with the communications and also the bench. It's not clear in here. Does the bench just mean a bench, or can it have a back and side arms also, like a chair-type bench?
Okay. Your first question was about the difference between the number of mobility accessible rooms and those with communication features. One thing, the communication features are not necessarily expensive to build into a facility, and the accessible features are much more expensive because of the space and configuration that they're doing. So I'm presuming that that is why Department of Justice does not have a huge number of accessible room features required.
I think also, Mary, the percentage of people with disabilities with communication disabilities is greater than the number of individuals with mobility disabilities.
With mobility. Although I think that as we get older, we're going to find more and more baby boomers needing more and more accessible features. But you're right.
Absolutely.
People using mobility devices and wheelchairs are usually within 10 to 12%. Some of the numbers that I've seen, and sometimes as high as 25% or more people with communication disabilities. Your second question was about the bench. When you're looking at, let's say, an accessible shower, an accessible tub, the requirement is that those features be built in to the facility. What you're talking about is if you prefer an accessible shower bench that's removable, that is not necessarily a requirement under the ADA. As customer service, you can talk with them about getting a shower bench that would be placed in a tub or a blow-in shower that might be easier for you to use. And we have actually on the hospitality website, we have a shower bench that we would recommend that has accessible features such as a transfer bench so that it could be used in tubs and in showers. It has a back. It has suction cups to assure that it doesn't move. It has grab bar, and it can be used right or left-handed. But that's more of a customer service issue and not a not a physical requirement under the structural requirements of the ADA.
You know, is there a way to get involved to make more changes in the future?
There's not going to be, I think, substantial changes, just my opinion, of the accessibility standards for quite a while. These changes have taken a number of years to happen, and the ADA is 20 years old, so I don't think that we're going to see changes in the near future.
Okay, and one last question. I'm sorry. When you call the hotels and you ask them if they're accessible, and they say, yes, they're accessible, but they do not have a handheld shower, what do you do then? Because I just got back. I went to Myrtle Beach, and I went to Gatlinburg, and to find a hotel with a handheld shower was almost impossible. I called at least 10 hotels and found one.
Well, the roll-in showers are required to have a handheld shower.
Right, those ones are just the tubs. They do not require handheld?
No.
I mean, I'm talking big hotels, not just 50 rooms, and we're talking hundreds of rooms. cold and big hotels, resorts.
Right. Well.
They're not required. Your questions.
They're not required to have a handheld shower.
The roll-in showers. And I've got a question, Marion, from online. I finally wanted a clarification asking, aren't the 2010 scoping for communication rooms a reduction because in the 1991 standards it required all mobility accessible rooms to have communication features?
That's a great question. As I indicated, there really isn't a reduction. It's just separating them out, so that they're not overlapping the mobility rooms. So what was happening, and it didn't make sense really, was that if you needed just the mobility features and not the, just the mobility features, you automatically got the communication features. For those who needed the communication features, they were going to be taking up a mobility room, because that's where the communication features were. Now they're separating them out. So as we indicated, there was a lot more people with communication needs, and they don't need the accessible space near the toilet or roll-in shower, an accessible tub. They don't need any of that. They just need the vibrating alarm clock and the flashing light to indicate somebody at the door, et cetera. So that's so much easier to reserve and provide, and then you're not taking up an accessible room. Because as we can see, accessible rooms, as we get more and more people with disabilities that affect their mobility, those rooms are going to be more and more in demand. So they're separating them out. They're just not overlaying, but it's the same expectation for the number of accessibility features for communication.
All right, great. Marion, why don't we go ahead to the last section, and then when we get to our next question period, we'll take questions on all topics.
Terrific. Okay. We're going to talk about the 2010 standards for accessible design. So lodging built after March 15, 2012, must comply with the 2010 standards, including new sections. And these are laundry facilities, never been covered before, kitchens and kitchenettes. More and more of the hotels are going to mini suites and suites where they actually somehow have full kitchens, and a lot of them have kitchenettes. So now we're looking at accessible features within that that hotel room. And then recreation facilities. We've never had standards for swimming pools and spas or saunas and steam rooms. We've never had accessibility standards for exercise facilities, golf courses, boating and fishing facilities, and play areas for children. And there are some hotels or some properties that might have actually all of these recreational facilities. But many, even some budget hotels, might have a play area for children. Many of them have swimming pools and spas. Many facilities have exercise facilities. And so now we actually have standards. So now there's a mandate for these new add-ons to the accessibility standards to meet the accessibility requirements. So this means that you're going to actually have the ability to participate if you have a mobility or communication difficulty. Most of these are really talking about mobility issues, to be able to participate in all of these recreational aspects, as well as use the kitchen or kitchenette, and if they have laundry facilities. Okay. The next slide, we're going to talk about how this plays out. Places of lodging that undergo planned alteration must comply with 2010 standards to the maximum extent feasible. So this is important, maximum extent feasible. If you have an existing facility and they're doing renovations,
to make make sure that they have accessible rooms, it may mean that they are going to have to do some standard, some changes to allow the room to be fully accessible. But it may be that there's load-bearing walls, and so they may not be able to make a room as accessible as they would if it was newly built. An example would be putting in a pool lift. It may be that they are unable to put the pool lift in the most ideal spot because of some plumbing issues. So there may be physical issues that the site, the layout, et cetera, will not allow an individual property to make the changes that they would like to make in order to make sure when doing renovations or alterations to make them fully accessible under the new 2010 standards that they must do to the extent possible. On the next slide, for places of public lodging, before March 15th, 2012, we're looking at removal of architectural barriers when readily achievable, except for the issue that we talked about earlier, and that was safe harbor. Safe harbor is for those elements that comply with the 1991 standards. And as an example, we use the 54-inch reach range. So if all of their reach ranges were perfect at 54 inches, they do not have to change an existing facility and move everything to 48 inches until they start doing alterations or building new additional rooms or areas. Those new additional rooms then have to be built fully accessible. But there's no safe harbor for elements with the new standards that didn't exist before, the laundry facilities and kitchens and recreational facilities, the swimming pools, et cetera, that we just talked about. So all of those, for the first time, now have standards that are going to require them to be accessible. So we're looking at now pools, looking to have accessibility features. Okay, next slide. Removing barriers. We talked about the fact that a hotel still has an ongoing obligation to remove barriers.
I'm sorry, can I turn there one thing? Lavita, can you just make sure that all the phone lines are muted? I'm hearing some background noise, and just want to make sure that everyone can hear Marion clearly. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Examples of readily achievable barrier removal might be making sure that if they have a high check-in counter, that they now have a lower one, and it can be, part of the original check-in counter, or it can be a side area that gets dropped down. Widening doorways is an easier thing to do. Installing grab bars behind inside the toilet or next to the tub or roll-in shower. Installing a pool lift. And this is a huge issue for the hotel industry, who is not necessarily very happy with the Department of Justice and their new requirements to install a pool lift at each of the pools that they may have. I was in a hotel yesterday that actually did not have, but would be required to have, 5 separate pool lifts because they had an indoor pool and spa, an outdoor hot tub, a child pool, and a regular swimming pool outside. So they would be required to install 5 independently operated pool lifts for each of the pools that they had on property.
Many hotels are very upset that they are not able to use portable pool lifts because, again, the standard is that they must be independently operated. So it's not something that you can pull out when somebody wants to use the pool. You should be able to use the pool just like everyone else does, which means you show up at the pool, you are able to transfer into the accessible pool lift, independently operate it, and lower yourself into the pool and be able to get back out of the pool. Now, again, hotels aren't required to lift you. You must be able to independently transfer into that pool lift. Some properties, because it may not be readily achievable because of the expense, might be able to show that a removable pool lift is readily achievable for them because of the cost. There is a Department of Justice pool fact sheet that can be found on the Department of Justice website that was recently developed and released to the public about 2 weeks ago. You'll also be able to find it on adahospitality.org. We talked about exercise rooms. One of the things that can easily be done, although for some facilities it might mean removing a few of the exercise equipment in order to make sure that there's path of travel to each of the types of equipment that an exercise room has in a place of lodging. So you need to be able to get to the exercise bike. You need to be able to get to the track, the separate exercise machine, whatever the exercise machine is. If they've got five different types of machines, you need to be able to get with an accessible path of travel to all five. In the next slide, we're talking about service animals, and someone asked about service animals. Many of you are aware that there is a new regulation. It identifies that service animals are dogs only, with the exception for miniature horse. So with dogs only, a hotel cannot turn away a service animal that is a trained service animal. And as you know, a trained service animal does not need to be trained by a specific company or entity, but it has to be trained to do specific features for the person with a disability. It could be mobility, it could be vision, it could be a seizure dog, it could be a hearing alert dog. So there's lots of different services that a dog may be able to perform for folks with different disabilities. We were asked earlier about relief areas, being able to identify where the relief area is. So that's something that I would encourage, even if you're using a service, and they'll say, yes, we have relief areas, you might want to call the hotel itself and say, you know, I'm bringing my service animal, can you describe the relief area and its location to the hotel room that I'm reserving and to the hotel in general? A hotel cannot ask you for a deposit for the service animal. Many hotels may say that we accept pets, but there's a $25 cleaning deposit. And once we've determined that there, you know, is no need for the cleaning deposit, we will rebate you the cleaning deposit. They cannot do that for a service animal. The next slide. Some of the strategies for success. If you know exactly what you need, for example, you need a room close to the elevator, a room on the first floor, if that exists. Many hotels don't have rooms on the first floor, but some do. If you need a room with an accessible tub or a fall-in shower or the specific communication features,
know exactly what that means, so that when you're making reservation, whether you're doing it through third party or the hotel reservation system, you can articulate that effectively. As we talked about earlier, you may want to call and talk to the specific property and not through the central reservation center to make sure you get local information. It might be it's just location to other venues that you're really willing and interested in going to, but it might be that you have very specific questions that the property itself may be the only one that can answer for you. The next slide talks about asking for what you may need. And it might be that if you have specific needs, your insulin still needs to be refrigerated, asking for a refrigerator to be placed in the room. Many times for those with folks with mobility needs, furniture needs to be moved. A traditional room usually has too much furniture to allow many people using mobility devices to be able to move freely and access all the features, especially getting to the wands to open and close drapes. There's often too many pieces of furniture in the way. So having somebody from the hotel, the bellman or hotel staff, come up with you to the room, maybe orient you to the room if you have a vision disability, tell you where things are. If you need furniture moved or removed to be able to use it. Oftentimes one of the things that could be done is to have an extension onto the wand to make the drapery fully accessible. Lowering the shower head wand to, a lot of times it's placed at the very top, which makes it inaccessible for those in a seated position. Having that drop down so that it rests extended and you'll be able to reach it. Looking at seeing if the blankets and pillows are placed at a lower level so that somebody from a seated position can use it. For folks with communication accessible rooms, making sure that the communication equipment is connected and you're oriented to how it is operated to make sure it's fully accessible to you. The next slide talks about the ADA National Network's hospitality initiative, and it's adahospitality.org. And it is a website dedicated to the lodging industry and restaurant industry, talking about accessible features, talking about training and materials. There are brochures and fact sheets. There are regulations, the new 2010 standards, all the new regulations from the Department of Justice are listed there. There is a training package that anyone can use for both the lodging and restaurant industry with all the talking features so that you can actually just download that, have a PowerPoint, and work with your local properties and restaurants to be able to provide accessible training on the features of the requirement of the ADA, customer service issues, to assure that guests and patrons with disabilities are treated in a fair and equitable manner. There's lots of resources for the hotel industry itself. I mentioned one of them, which was the shower chair, the shower bench, removable bench that is not a requirement, but a recommendation for an accessible transfer bench. So these are a lot of resources that are available free on our website that you might find of interest. Lastly, if you have any questions about this, I know that we're not going to be able to reach all of your issues and concerns. We encourage you to call and visit the ADA National Network's website, which is adata.org. Visit the Hospitality Initiative, which is www.adahospitality.org, or call your local ADA Regional Center, which is 1-800-949-4232, voice and TTY. Call the Department of Justice,
at 1-800-514-0301, voice, and 1-800-514-0383, PTY, or visit them at www.ada.gov. And for a lot of the structural issues that we discussed, to call the U.S. Access Board, which is 1-800-872-2253, voice, 800-993-2822, PTY, or visit them on the web at access-board.gov. And now, Peter, I'll turn it back to you and see if we have more questions.
Marian, all right, yeah, we certainly have more questions than we're going to be able to get to in the next 10, 11 minutes here. But just one quick correction I want to make, that the in the accessible rooms that do have bathtubs, a handheld shower unit is required in both the 1991 and the 2010 standards.
Oh, you're right. I'm so sorry. I was focusing on... You're so right. Thank you for correcting.
No, just wanted to get that out there. So to the folks at Gary Edler's site, we've got that for you. While Levita, get you in here in 1 second to let folks, if they don't already know how to get a question asked on telephone, we're going to do that. Marian, I have a question that was submitted online, and this has to do with the compliance date, and the question involved what happens if you have a hotel where the foundation is being poured on March 14th, 2012. What standards would they have to follow?
Peter, I'm going to defer to you, but
Okay. Yeah. So between March 15th, 2011, and March 14th, 2012, a place of public accommodation had the option to choose to follow either the 1991 or the 2010 standards. But any construction that there are some other exceptions. If a local jurisdiction requires that permits be certified, if the permit is certified on or before or prior to March 15th, the entity still has the option to choose between 91 and 2010. And in jurisdictions where permits are required but they are not certified, if the actual physical receipt by the state, local county government, or the local town takes place prior to March 15th, the entity still has the option between 91 and the 2010 standards. So those are the still exceptions that we may experience as we straddle the compliance date coming up. Right, Levita, if you want to jump in here and give folks instructions again to get our first phone call up on the telephone, please.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star, then one key. We do have a question from Pam Gear. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. We have a question concerning slide 24 having to do with accessible features mobility. And you talk about the need for 36 inches on each side of the bed or between the beds. And I'm just curious whether we can use the requirements of Title III for a modification in policy, practice, and procedure to ask that they lower the bed. All the hotels now are putting in these pillow-top beds that are like climbing Mount Everest. And there's a requirement that they have space under the bed for a Hoyer lift. We're seeing that is not often complied with, but if there is, it's usually some kind of a frame, and the bed can, in fact, be lowered by removing that frame. Is that something they would be required to do as a modification in policy, practice, or procedure?
You could certainly ask them to do that as a need for your accessibility. Unfortunately, there is no bed height requirement yet. The Department of Justice is looking at that now and is putting out regulation for comments on that. So what it means is you can call them, ask about the bed height. Many of them only have platforms. They don't have any beds. You can ask them if they would modify that and be able to bring in an accessible, platform-free bed to do so as a readily achievable
But, you know, it's difficult to mandate that. It's not a requirement under the ADA, but they can. You can ask them to do that as a modification. It is very challenging for many people currently who travel with wireless to find a hotel that actually does have the features of a bed frame that is open and underneath. And as you said also, many, many of the hotels are going to the luxury pillow tops, and it can be, it is like climbing Mount Everest. So sometimes you can ask them to remove the box spring and be able to bring the bed down to a lower height, see if they will remove some of the pillow tops. Sometimes they are removable. And that's one of the things that you might want to call each local property to see what they're able to do, what the bed height is and what modifications they can make to make it accessible. Sometimes they can actually, if it's not a platform, they can actually put some of those on the floor, and it still may be an acceptable height for transferring if you're using a mobility device.
All right, Marian, I've got a question from online. Someone wanted a definition of what you mean by alteration that would trigger compliance, you know, after March 15th with the 2010 standards.
So if there, a lot of times they will go in and renovate or alter a room to upgrade it. And that means not just painting, but if they're tearing up the carpet, they're making changes in different other portions of the room, then they would have to comply with the 2010 standards. So it's not just painting, but if they're doing other structural, tearing up the carpet, et cetera, then that would trigger the need for the alteration.
Right, so talking about stuff that affects the usability of the space. Let me get a service animal question for you real quick. And talked about the prohibition against placing surcharges, and the questioner wanted to know, what if the service animal does cause damage to the room? Could the hotel charge the guest in that instance?
If I'm not mistaken, if the animal does charge, then they could ask for a cleaning fee. They just can't mandate that you put a deposit on the room prior.
Great.
And if there was destruction, I'm pretty sure that they would be able to ask for something to compensate. Peter, do you?
Yeah, right. I mean, it'd be the same with whatever the policy they have in place for, you know, guests without disabilities that, you know, cause damages in the room. They could, you know, charge that for a person with a disability using a service animal where the service animal caused damage to the room. Lavita, do we have one more question on telephone? And again, apologize, folks. Lots of great questions coming in. We're not going to be able to get to all of them. But could we take Lavita one more by telephone before we get to the bottom of the hour?
Our last question comes from Julia Singh.
Hello. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Marian, is about transporting. I noticed that on the website you do say something about having equivalent service for the shuttles back and forth to the airport and so forth. But I don't see that on your PowerPoint on your website, and you haven't mentioned that today.
Oh, good point, Julia. We were trying to focus on some of what the newer standards were. But if they operate, let's say, a van service to and from the airport, they are required to, based on the size of the van, small vans wouldn't be, but larger vans would require to have equivalent service. A lot of hotels don't, but sometimes they will either cooperate with neighboring hotels or will order an accessible van service for you or coordinate with a local accessibility service to provide you equivalent service. So they can't charge you for maybe they've arranged for an accessible taxi to come and take you to the airport because their van service wasn't accessible. They can't charge you for that cost if they offer it free to all of their other guests.
All right, great, Marian. Thanks for all the fabulous information that you provided to us today. We appreciate it. Appreciate it greatly. Just as a quick reminder, the ADA National Network is presenting a 6-part webinar series on lodging and the new reservation requirements, as well as the new accessibility requirements as they apply to the lodging industry. And that is something that the ADA National Network is doing in collaboration with the American Hotel and Lodging Association, as well as the Asian American Hotel Owners Association. The second session in that 6-part series takes place tomorrow. You can get scheduling information and register online by visiting www.adaconferences.org/lodging, capital LODGING. Just the L is capital. So you can, a lot of the questions that you may not have been had answered today are going to come up over the next 5 sessions, and all of those are being archived, as well as today's session. An archive of today's session will be made available on the audio conference website, www.ada-audio.org. Select the audio conference series, and then archives, and you'll find an archive of today's session in approximately 10 business days. I ask you to come back and join us on March the 20th, where we will look at a different aspect involving service animals. So we'll be looking at service animals in the post-secondary education setting. So once again, you can get scheduling information and register online for that upcoming session and all future audio conference sessions by, again, visiting www.ada-audio.org and selecting the audio conference series, or by calling us at 877-232-1990, voice or TTY. So once again, I want to thank all of you for joining us today and participating. Hope all of you have a great day. And again, thanks to Marian Vessels for the excellent presentation, all the information she provided to us today. For those of you in the webinar room, you can exit the webinar platform by simply closing your internet browser. Thank you, and take care.
Ladies and gentlemen,